I went to the Body Worlds exhibit a few weeks ago and had a lot of conflicting emotions. I found it fascinating anatomically. At the same time, it seemed to have a funeral atmosphere to it. I think it was particularly the music that gave me this impression. And the question that I came away with, as somebody who's in theology and interested in the question of death and afterlife, the question that I came away with was, are we our bodies? And what's the overall impression that you get from the exhibit? Maybe it was the eyes. They didn't really look dead. And so I kind of got the impression from the exhibit that in effect, the message I took away from it was, we are our bodies. Three of the quotes from Seneca, Euripides, and Nietzsche were to that effect, that when we die, that's the end of us, and so what we are is our bodies. That's the question I want to address tonight. Are we just our bodies, or is there some aspect of us that survives bodily death? This is a question that I think, I don't know that the exhibit intentionally raises this question, but I think it does raise it. Now, I would say that if I'm correct in interpreting the exhibit as the message being that we are our bodies, I would say that's directly in line with mainline science, with biology, with neuroscience, which more and more has really tends to see the human being as the sum of our material components. Neuroscience in particular equates the mind with the brain. I'll give you a quote from Francis Crick's The Astonishing Hypothesis. Crick says, the astonishing hypothesis that you, your joys and your sorrows, your memories and your ambitions, your sense of personality and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. This is a position you might call hard reductionism. Jeffrey Schwartz, who's a neuropsychiatrist at UCLA, recently came out with a book called The Mind and the Brain. Very interesting book. And he says this, materialism, it seems fair to say, has neuroscience in a chokehold and has had it there since the 19th century. The materialist reductionist camp holds that when we have mapped a mental process to location in the brain, we have indeed fully explained the phenomenon in question. Schwartz, what you might say, is a liberal in neuroscience because he doesn't think we are just our bodies. He thinks that there's an emergent self, and particularly an emergent free choice, which he thinks he can demonstrate, so that we're more than our bodies. But at the same time, I think he would not say that there's any aspect of us which lives on after the death of the brain. So far as I know, I know quite a few people in biology, both at my own university, here at the University of Minnesota, and other places. I don't know of anybody in the sciences that will affirm, especially in biological sciences, that would affirm the existence of a soul, an immaterial soul, which survives the death of the body. I think this is an outre position in the sciences. There's a number of people in the sciences, however, such as Schwartz himself, who would say that what we have is what we are is an emergent self, which depends on the complexity of the brain, depends on our social interaction with others, so that certain of our capacities, like free choice, personality, things like this, are gradually built up over our lifetime, depend on our brain, depend on our body, and aren't directly reducible to us. So Schwartz would disagree with Crick. We're more than just the assemblies of our nerve cells. There's some kind of emergent properties or an emergent self which goes beyond that. But at the same time, Schwartz and others would say, once we're dead, we're dead. That's it. And so they'd agree with many of the quotes in the science exhibit. Now, what's interesting to me as a theologian is how this conflicts with traditional religion, because traditional religion, almost across the board, from animist societies down to relatively developed modern religions, has taken the position that in some sense we're more than just our bodies. In some sense, personality can survive the death of the body. So, for example, even in animism, African, Chinese religions, there's generally a sense of ancestor spirits. There's generally a sense that some aspect of the person lives on after the death of the body. The best example of this probably is reincarnation in Hinduism, where, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, that the body is like a suit of clothes that the self exchanges as it dies and puts on a new body. This is taken over in Buddhism, although Buddhism has the peculiar position of denying that there is a self. There's no substance, there's no self, and yet they also maintain reincarnation. Various schools of Buddhism work out this paradox differently among themselves. Tibetan Buddhism, I think, would say that consciousness survives 49 days after the body and is typically reincarnated. I think Pure Land sects would say the same thing. But there's a range of Buddhist positions. Traditional Judaism and Islam have traditionally believed in an immortal soul and bodily resurrection. And the soul is crucial because it provides continuity between the person who dies and the person who's resurrected. I think, as far as I know, this is the position of all Muslims. It's the position of Orthodox and traditionalist Jews, although not Reformed Jews. Traditional Christianity is the same way. My reading of it, although this you can get different readings, but I think it's fairly solid that you would say that there's a belief in an immortal soul and bodily resurrection together. So the person who dies carries on in some sense and then awaits the resurrection of the body in the eschaton, the end times. So, for example, in Revelation 6, verse 9, the seer says, "When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slaughtered for the word of God." Now, these people are dead. They've been slaughtered, but they're obviously they're not resurrected, their souls. Okay, but at the same time, Christians hold that Jesus' body was resurrected and not resuscitated. There's a difference. And indeed, that Christian believers will likewise be resurrected. This is the gist of Paul makes this very clear in 1 Corinthians 15. That all of us Christians, he says, can expect to be resurrected as the Lord was. The Roman Catholic position is that God creates the soul of each person directly, but that the person will also be resurrected. You might think for a minute about how strange this is, because the idea that God creates the soul directly and then at the same time we're going to be resurrected. How exactly is the soul a part of the person? Is it kind of injected in the person at a certain stage? 5 minutes? Okay. So there's problems, particularly if you compare this with the evolutionary statements. At what point, for example, when human beings develop out of primate ancestors, does a soul appear? It's the same problem if you ask yourself at what point in the gestation of a fetus does the soul appear. Some contemporary Christians hold that we are our bodies and that we will be resurrected, but there is no soul. A good statement of this position is in Warren Brown and Nancy Murphy's book, Whatever Happened to the Soul. My own position, which I'll just summarize in a few minutes, is that it's certainly necessary in this life. I don't think we can ignore the findings in neuroscience. I think it's necessary in this life to hold that we are a psychophysical unity. We are a unity of mind and body, so that what happens to our brain affects our mind. What happens to our mind can affect our body. I think that you have to hold that. I've been influenced, and this is an idiosyncratic position of my own, I've been influenced by the results of near-death experiences in which people seem to be able to describe from an out-of-body perspective what's going on, for example, in the operating room when they're being operated on. There's an interesting video on this in the BBC that was just released last year called The Day I Died, in which a woman who had an aneurysm at the base of her brain, they had to drain the blood out of her body in order to operate on it, chill the body down to just above freezing. An unbelievable, you wouldn't think she could have survived, but she did, and came back and described all the utensils in the operating room, which had been kept under wraps because of sterile conditions, described conversations and so on. It's a rather striking thing. If you can get this video, it's worth seeing. So how do you put these two things together? How can you say, on the one hand, we are a psychophysical unity in this life, and as I would want to maintain, on the other hand, the personality can, in some sense, survive bodily death, and I would also hold for resurrection. I would suggest, and I talk about this in my book, The Sacred Cosmos, that, in fact, at some point in each of our life, God establishes a relationship with the emerging person, and that this constant carries with it the gift of immortality, that in some sense, although the form is the organizing principle of the body, and in this life is always involved with the body, in some sense the relationship that God has with each person allows the personality to survive the death of the body and then eventually to be resurrected. Okay, thank you.